John Hanson broadcasting live from the United Center in the basement ahead of the game against the Islanders. Well, the pregame show for you at 7 o'clock, but it's Your Money Matters in the meantime. And I don't know if you've been following the Twitter saga ever since Elon Musk bought the company. It's been interesting to watch Elon's tweets this week, at least the ones that haven't been deleted. Garrett DeVink joins us right now from the Washington Post. And Garrett, one of the really interesting things has been trying to figure out how much exactly Twitter wants to charge people for the blue check mark. Thanks for joining us, Garrett.
Of course.
It's been following him and his tweets live. He floated the idea of $20, then got into an exchange with Stephen King and kind of put $8 out there as a number. Is that the number that they've now settled on?
I don't think they've settled on any number, but that does seem to be the number that he's working with right now. And, you know, things are moving very quickly. Elon Musk is, you know, meeting with some Twitter executives with his own inner circle and just been doing a lot of brainstorming over the last few days. And it looks like he comes up with an idea, posted on Twitter before that a lot of Twitter employees themselves have even heard about it. I mean, we've had discussions with Twitter employees who say that they're learning about their new marching orders from Twitter, from their new boss tweeting about it. So, you know, $8 is the number that he's talking about now, although I think that that could change along with everything else.
It is very unusual to watch a CEO make decisions in seeming real time based on feedback and polls he's getting from the very company that he now owns. It's unusual, to say the least.
It's very unusual, but it's pretty usual for Elon Musk. He loves Twitter. He spends a lot of time on it, even though he is the world's richest man and is the CEO of several companies. But yeah, he loves being on there, apparently, talking to people, engaging with people. I think from his mind, you know, being on Twitter and asking actual users questions is sort of, to him, the most democratic way to do it. You know, of course, it's also very chaotic, and, you know, the kind of people giving him ideas on there, you know, might not always have the best ideas. And so there's a lot of, you know, that chaos is translating to the actual Twitter employees, many of whom are waiting for a potential, you know, big layoff to come at some point this week. You know, it's a pretty tough environment for the people who are actually, you know, on the hook to put these changes into practice at the company.
I think it's important to understand what the blue check mark means. I know for a lot of people it's clout, right? Like, look at me, I'm an established person or a celebrity. But its true meaning, or the true reason for it, was meant to be verification, right? To prevent someone from impersonating you or misinformation to be spread. Am I wrong in that?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, the original reason for the verification was so that, you know, people would trust what they saw on Twitter more. You know, if you saw a tweet from someone claiming to be, you know, a powerful politician, or maybe a journalist who was breaking some news, or, you know, your local government announcing some kind of natural disaster, something like that, you wanted to know that it wasn't going to be a prank. And because on Twitter, you don't actually have to use your real name, it's quite easy to just change your name, your handle, put a fake photo on there, and pretend to be someone else. And even if it's sort of figured out quite quickly, because Twitter is so fast and things can go viral, it is possible that people can sort of, you know, go viral with those kinds of fake tweets. And so the idea was to sort of just give a little bit of an extra layer so that people could kind of just check the tweet. Okay, is this from a verified source? And they might have some more trust that it was a real piece of information. But yeah, I mean, Elon Musk is now sort of wrapping that verification layer into some of the other, you know, into a sort of a subscription service so that he can make more money. And I think from his perspective, he feels that people will want to pay for that because it does bring some added clout. Of course, a lot of people who have those blue check marks right now are saying, look, I won't pay a single cent for that. And so we're going to have to see what will happen.
Yeah, well, we'll have to see if $8 is what they ended up settling on. It could change tomorrow. Garrett, thanks for your time. I appreciate it.
Anytime.
All right, that's Garrett DeVink from Washington Post. Interesting story there. Hey, by the way, we have a question of the day today, 312-981-7200. This is like a rollover from last week. New York leads the nation at 190 so of these. Chicago's second, around 180. And Las Vegas is third, near 170. We got to get an answer to this, folks, today. 312-981-7200. If you're a guest, you'll get a WGN Radio t-shirt. First, let's get a look at weather and traffic with Mary Vandeveld. Okay. We're going to get the answer to the question of the day, we hope. Chicago is second with 180 or so of these. New York is first at 190 or so. Las Vegas comes in third at 170, so about 10 difference between what I'm talking about. Colette is on WGN. Colette, what is your guess here on Your Money Matters?
My guess is pizza places.
Great guess, just not the answer. Let's go to Fred. Fred, you're on. I'm sorry, Colette. Let's go to Fred on line two. Fred, what is your guess? Fred? Going
Hello?
Once? Hey, is this Fred?
Hi, Fran. Fred. Red light cameras.
Good guess. I bet Chicago's up there. Just not the answer. I'm sorry. Thanks so much for playing. We appreciate it. All right, we've talked about quiet quitting. This is Your Money Matters, by the way. I'm John Hanson here on WGN, taking you to Blackhawks hockey. And quiet quitting was all the rage the last couple weeks. Now we're going to talk about quiet firing. We've got a job market expert on, Trevor Houston, joining us, host of Who You Know. It's a networking show. And Trevor, quiet firing. I guess it shouldn't have been a big surprise that that would be quick behind after a quiet quitting.
Yeah, absolutely. It's the new trend. You know, actually, this has kind of been here for a while. And really, when you think about it, it's, you know, it's ageism, which what I really call it is payism. Okay. And what we're finding is headed into this recession, you know, companies are starting to look at their financials, and a lot of these older workers, they get paid more. And so, yeah, they're doing this thing called quiet firing.
What are the statistics to back?
Hoping they can ignore them.
Right. Well, okay, what are the statistics to back this up? Because even with the quiet quitting trend, it became a trendy thing to say, and that's always my number one question. What statistics back up that we think that older workers are being fired more now or laid off more now, leading into a potential recession?
Yeah, I don't know if, you know, there was a study that was done that by BBC Work Life Study that said that over workers over 50 are more than twice as likely as other workers to be unemployed for over 2 years or longer if they lose their current job, and three times less likely to get an interview than a 28-year-old. But I don't know about any specific stats that go into saying it's happening more where they're quiet firing, but I do think it's a trend that we've seen in the past, and it's just now getting labeled, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that makes sense. That does make sense to me. And I know that older workers make more, but I mean, that's at the company's risk, because older workers often kind of make the company go.
Yeah, you know, there's this, it goes both ways. There's negative stereotypes about older workers, and there's positive stereotypes of older workers. Some of the negative stereotypes are, you know, they may be slower to adapt or a resistor of ideas, less motivated, less productive, things like that. Maybe less on social media, you know, technology. But there's some positive stereotypes, too, you need to think about. These companies need to be looking at, which is, you know, older workers bring wisdom. They bring value, stability, loyalty, experience. They have different perspectives and ideas. And actually, I was looking at another study where it showed that companies that have a higher tenure actually have a higher financial and operational performance. So I think that they're definitely needed. There's a place for them. But it's, again, it's all those negative stereotypes that's going on right now.
Right. We're talking with Tyler Houston, chatting about job market. He's a job market expert. Tell us a little bit about the Who You Know job networking show, Trevor. And I called you Tyler a moment ago. I apologize. I meant Trevor.
Yeah. Oh, that's okay. That's all right. So the Who You Know show is designed to help with a lot of these issues like this one here, helping, you know, people get back to work and get back to their cash flow. We like to interview, you know, all kinds of different folks, from career coaches, recruiters, companies, anybody that can help career changers get back to their cash flow. And so ageism is something we've covered many times, and it's just now starting to make the headlines with this quiet firing thing.
I think that ageism is one of those things, too, that I don't think everyone should be aware of it. Certainly HR departments are aware of it. It's illegal. You can't do that.
Yeah, it is illegal, and it shows up inside of job descriptions, the applicant tracking systems and screening process and the interviewing process. So through that whole recruiting process that companies have, it can show up. And we see it all the time. So companies do need to be careful. It's hard. It's a hard one to prove, but you know, we do see it all the time.
Right. And Trevor, I should note that someone just texted in asking what's quiet quitting. Yeah, we've been talking about it a lot, but it's a good reminder to remind people. What's your definition of quiet quitting?
Yeah, quiet quitting is something we saw. I call it burnout. Okay, this is what I call it. You know, people, since the pandemic, they're working from home, and so every day kind of becomes Groundhog's Day, if you will. I don't think people were meant to be stuck behind a computer all the time and in these Zoom meetings back and forth. And so I think what's happening is people are getting disconnected from the culture. They're getting disconnected from the mission and what the purpose is that they're even going to work. And they're slowly doing less and less and less and less and less and starting to expect more and more and more and more and more of their employers.
Right.
And so that's really what silent quitting is. It's almost the exact opposite of this quiet firing thing.
All right. Well, it's good to break it on down. Obviously, ageism not okay. If you think it's happening to you, there's ways you can obviously report that as well. Trevor Houston, I'm glad we got a chance to chat. Let's do it again soon, okay?
Absolutely. Thank you.
All right. We're going to take a break and hopefully get an answer to the question of the day before the news. New York number one, Chicago number two, Las Vegas number three. At what? Let's find out after this on WGN. 720 WGN. By the way, you heard that commercial for Innovation DuPage. They're going to be in tomorrow, and I'm so excited. We'll be chatting with the managing director, Dan Ficini, as we've done before. But he's got two folks with him that have done some great stuff with Innovation DuPage, and it's all going to be about toys, toy inventors. Yes, that's a job that you can have. If you ever had an idea for a toy or a game, you do not want to miss tomorrow's show. And even if you just like playing with toys or games, you don't want to miss that either. All right, New York number one, Chicago number two, Las Vegas number three. Brandon, what is your guess?
Bus stops.
Oh, good guess, just not the answer. Let's go to Steve. Steve, what's your guess?
I want to say skyscrapers.
Chicago is number two in skyscrapers. New York is number one. And number three is Miami. So close, Steve. Oh, I left you dangling there. I'm sorry, buddy. All right, time for the news on WGN. 720 WGN at 639. This is Your Money Matters. I'm John Hansen. I wanted to read a text from the 773. We were talking about ageism in the last segment. I've worked 34 years in corporate, says the 773. My husband, 44 years, a blue-collar worker. We're not out to pasture yet. We both have brand-new, viable careers in different industries, being treated very well in our new jobs, and making tons of money. You go, 773. 312-981-7200. Are you an older worker? How are you being treated at work? Have you experienced ageism? AARP says a lot of people, I don't have the number right in front of me, but it's over 70% of people feel like they've experienced ageism in the office over the age of 55. Kind of curious what you listeners think. 312-981-7200. The ever ageless Tom Appel joins us from Consumer Guide Automotive, and they're going EV. Volkswagen is, aren't they?
They are indeed, yeah. Volkswagen is in the process of establishing and launching a new brand that will be EV exclusive, and it's aimed largely at the U.S. market.
And it's dubbed Scout, and I was watching the commercial that you posted at Consumer Guide, and this is this harkens back to a simpler time.
It really does. Yeah, back when you could buy an SUV without air conditioning and then really without rear doors. The Scout brand was sold by International Harvester, or I should say the Scout SUV, and a related pickup truck between 1961 and 1980. And they were rugged and very much Jeep-like, if you remember what the Cherokee and Grand Cherokee looked like at the time. This was a similar vehicle and a similar size.
Okay, so this is a new thing coming from Volkswagen. How soon can we expect it?
We're looking to see stuff by 2026. I don't know if that'll be a 2026 model year vehicle, but it'll be exclusively crossovers and pickups.
Okay. And I'm sorry, you know, I don't know much about cars. That's why I have you on as the expert. Has Volkswagen, they have other EV stuff too, right? Or is this kind of their first foray into this?
No, they've got several, and the ID4 is on sale in the U.S. right now. This is going to be an exclusive EV brand, and if you're cynical, you might think that Volkswagen is doing this not because we all love and remember the Scout, but because they're trying to establish a new franchise that might work outside the established dealer network, the established franchise system.
Okay. My question also is, why only in the U.S. market? Do they not sell their EVs in their home base either?
They do. EVs internationally are a little bit different than what we're looking at in the U.S. We love trucks. We love crossovers in the U.S., so this is working well for Volkswagen here. But they sell other EVs in other markets that are soft rotors or look a little bit more like cars or traditional crossovers. But the truck thing, like General Motors GMC division is bringing back the Hummer brand, for example, in the U.S., and that's this huge, rugged thing. And that's really the kind of reputation I think that Volkswagen's looking to chase.
How are EV trucks going in terms of people wanting them and the desire for them and their performance compared to what we're used to?
It is so hard to gauge customer demand for vehicles because there's such a shortage of vehicles available. Sure. But it's looking like the Ford F-150 Lightning, which is the all-electric version of the F-150, is extremely popular, and the waiting line for that vehicle is long. Whether or not they're producing everything they can at this point is unclear, but it seems like demand there is huge.
Let's talk about demand really quickly. Generally speaking, zooming out of the EV world, any loosening in this? Or are we still as tight as we were when we talked about a month ago or so?
There is now a clear pattern of easing, which is good news. The supply of vehicles on the ground at dealerships is up slightly. Used car prices have receded slightly. And it looks like transaction prices on new cars have dropped a little bit, too. Not dramatically, but the trend is enough to give people hope.
Yeah, I think the last time I had you on, one of my friends had just sold their car with 80,000 miles on it or something like that. Maybe it was 40,000 for more than he bought it for 5 years ago. I guess he looked up that on the Blue Book value of it just a day or two ago, and it had dropped $3,000. That's just one very specific example, but could the days of selling for more than you bought for could be ending soon, if not already.
Yeah, and demand is being curbed slightly, too, by an increase in interest rates. Payments are way up now on the same price vehicle because of interest rates. So affordability has become an issue. There's still plenty of wealthy people or middle-class wealthy people who can afford cars, but it's shrinking slightly as the payments rise.
All right. You know, we talk about interest rates rising affecting home sales, but you're right. Of course, they affect car sales as well. Tom Appel, this is a short conversation. Normally, we're able to take some calls. A packed show today. I appreciate you hopping on with us, okay?
The pleasure was mine. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, we'll do it again soon. ConsumerGuide.com is where you can find a lot of what Tom does over there. And again, we still got this question of the day. I wanted to answer today. Someone on the text line has the answer, and I keep on telling them to call in. I don't know if they're scared to, but please do, because we want to answer this question and move on with our lives. This has been here for like a week. New York is number one with about 190 of these. Chicago's number two with 180. Las Vegas is number three with 170. Put us all out of our misery and call 312-981-7200 so we can move on. Mary Vandeveld wants to move on, I know, to traffic and weather, but to get this question answered. 649 on WGN, Your Money Matters. New York, number one in the country with 190 of these. Chicago's got 180. Las Vegas has 170. 1, 2, and 3. Let's get down the line and try and get an answer. We're going to Jacob first. Jacob, put us out of our misery. What's the answer?
Right. I'm guessing it's taxis.
No. Good guess. Let's go to Janice. Sorry if I sound upset. Sorry, Jacob. No, that was a great guess. Janice, what's your guess?
My guess is museums.
I love that answer. It's just not the answer. Let's go to Charlie. Charlie, what is your guess?
My guess is zip codes.
Ooh, I like that guess. That's just not the answer. Let's go to Bob. Bob.
How about active telephone booth?
You know, actually, I think New York just got rid of the last one of their telephone booths. I think that answer would have been great a couple years ago, just not today. And we'll round it off with Dan. Dan, what is your guess?
How about Chinese restaurants?
I like that guess. That makes a lot of sense. All these guesses make sense, but Dan, you probably know where I'm going with this one. He already hung up. It's not the right answer. He knew exactly where I was going. Keep on calling. We'll try and get it before the end of the show, but we got to talk to James Ferris from Insider. James, sorry, I didn't mean to introduce you by saying we got to talk to James. You're helping us and helping our listeners because there's a Vanguard co-manager that has done something pretty extraordinary so far this year. Thanks for coming on, James.
Hey, it's very nice to speak with you, John. No problem at all, and I appreciate you having me on.
Her name is Sharon Hill. Tell us a little bit about her.
Absolutely. So she manages $48 billion. That's billion with a B.
Wow.
In an equity income fund. And basically, her goal is to achieve high returns while managing risk. And the way she does that is by investing in dividend stocks.
Okay.
And I can, you know, speak more to why those are so helpful. And
yeah, please
do. Please do.
I mean, these are income earning stocks, right?
Yes, sir. That's exactly right. So the beauty about dividend stocks is that, of course, like any shareholder, you hope that they appreciate over time. But even if they stay steady or even decline, you're going to be getting paid a consistent, reliable yield. So you get paid to hold them, and that's the beauty. That is all predicated on, of course, if the company that is issuing the dividend is financially healthy, they have a balance sheet that can support the dividend left over from their profits, et cetera. But you can, with a dividend, you can get that total return that involves the yield as well as the share price appreciation. And that's, now you have to select the right stocks, of course, but that's how Sharon has been able to achieve relatively strong returns compared to this weak market.
I have a really dumb question, James, but that's what my job is here on this program. You're lucky to answer it. You know, because I often try and buy stocks that produce dividends as well. It just kind of makes sense to me. Why don't all stocks provide dividends? That's a really dumb question, but isn't it enticing to bring people on to become shareholders by offering dividends? Why are so many not offering them?
It is. Well, taking good care of shareholders, like you mentioned, is something that helps a company raise money and capital down the road. It keeps them financially healthy, et cetera. But not every company can issue a dividend because not every company is profitable. And so what you see from different companies have different goals, right? Like if you're Zoom, you know, the video calling provider that exploded during the pandemic, instead of issuing a dividend, what their shareholders wanted to see is, let's take that profit that could be issued out as a dividend, but we'd actually rather see it reinvested in the business, and that can help them achieve growth. And then maybe 5 or 10 years down the road, then you can pay a dividend. You know, Amazon is a company that now pays a very small dividend, but for a while they didn't. And, you know, there's a lot of Apple, for example. When you're a growing company, a lot of times what you want is to just keep that growth going. And then once you're a mature business, in a financially healthy one at that, that's when you later on down the road can issue a dividend.
That was an excellent answer, James. And I guess it also makes sense why you would then invest in companies that don't offer dividends. It's not because I don't offer a dividend, but it's because they're a growing company. Your ROI potential, return on investment potential, could be much larger with one of those companies versus one that is more established. It is already kind of built in that price. That's why it is expensive. That's why they offer the dividends. You may make money over time, but you're not going to see some meteoric growth.
That's absolutely right. You nailed it.
Hey, I learn a thing or two on this show when I host it. So what Sharon has done is really focused on these dividends. Is there a little luck in this as well, too? Or is it she has a keen eye for this that other people may have missed some signs about?
Right. Well, she has a process that she sticks to, and there's really four key components to it, John. The first thing that she does is, of course, in the dividend fund, you have to look at dividend growth. And, you know, that's something you want to look at. Not just does a company have a dividend, but are they increasing it? Are they growing it over time? And in order to do that, you have to be a quality company. And as I mentioned before, that's a financially healthy company, a sound balance sheet, regular, consistent profits, solid margins. That's all a company in that. And then she also takes a look at valuation to make sure that she's not overpaying for a stock. And then she takes a look at sentiment around the stock. And that's not just, is the company going up or is the company going down? It also factors in analyst estimates and make sure that the general investing community is relatively optimistic on a stock. If a stock that she examines passes all four of those criteria, she can take a look at it and then invest in it. And she's done pretty well this year, beating about 90% of her competitors so far in 2020.
We've got about 30 seconds left, James. I know that some people might say, well, that's a $48 billion manager. I can't learn anything from that. Can we do those same things, look at dividend growth, valuation, quality, and sentiment by doing our own research and start to act like that a bit?
Absolutely. And I don't know if I want to speak for Sharon, but whether it's $48 billion, $48 million, $48,000, or $48, if you follow the steps, I think you can have some success.
James, it's great to chat with you. Thanks for explaining this all for us. And it's a really great read at Insider at businessinsider.com. Have a good one, James, okay?
Appreciate it. You too. Have a good one. Bye.
All right. We're going to take a break. One of the people on hold has the answer to the question of the day, week, feels like a month. So we will have an answer. You're going to have to stick around for that. We'll have news coming up. Oh, no, no news. We go right to the Blackhawks at the top of the hour. So let's take that break now here on WGN. And that family pack is a great deal. Come to the United Center. This team is fun to watch. We're having a blast here. Jenna Rose is right next to me. Right after this show, we go upstairs and we have fun with all the fans throughout the whole game. And I hope to see you at the United Center. If you see us, please wave, say hello as well, especially those folks that are driving here right now. We'll get an answer to the question of the day in a moment. But first, Janice.
Steakhouses.
No. Let's go to Bob. Bob, what's your guess?
Rail cars.
No. Let's go to Jack. What's your guess?
Theaters.
Great guess. Not the answer. Let's go to Matt on line one. Matt, what is your guess?
Starbucks.
And that's the answer to the question of the day, the week.